Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. The future of agriculture. Record rainfall and extreme weather has become a common occurrence around the world. We're used to seeing images of farmers standing in front of flooded fields or crops simply rotting on the vine. It is the subject of a new book called The Future of Agriculture. It's by Sarah Birchall, and I'm delighted to say that Sarah joins us live on the line now, not from a muddy field, I hasten to add. Well, good morning to you, Sarah.
Morning, Giles. Morning, everyone.
Whereabouts are you? Because I can't see any hail bales behind you, and I can't see you know up to your neck in your hunter welly. So whereabouts are you this morning?
So today I'm at home in South Oxfordshire, where we are basking in the end of a heat wave.
Basking, yes. And now, you see, now, you know, I'll see your heat wave and raise you about 15, because I'm sitting literally in the southern Spain, just have 30 minutes drive from Gibraltar. We have been hit in southern Spain by a heat wave. It has done, and we are seeing more and more of not only the intensity, but also the longevity, the period of time for these heat waves are coming across. So what is the starting point for your book, The Future of Agriculture?
So basically, agriculture is incredibly complex. You know, our whole food system, we're talking about the environment, we're talking about politics, there's science in there. It's a really complex thing. So trying to fit that into a slim volume was kind of interesting.
What's your background? Sorry, I forgot to ask you, what's your background to write on this, by the way? I didn't sort of qualify why you're eminently qualified to write this book.
Okay, so my background is as an agricultural botanist. Right. So I did a doctorate studying diseases of wheat, which involved me standing in nice wet fields and counting things, and also working in a lab counting more things.
Right, fair enough. So
so I've come from that and then spent like 10 years working doing science with children, and then went back to write this book on agriculture.
Doing science with children must have been fascinating. I mean, you're talking to perfect, not just with your own little rugrats, but actually, you know, science with children. I mean, you know, poor frogs notwithstanding. I mean, presumably that is introducing to the wonders of science and making it interesting, exciting, getting more women involved, girls involved with it, and really sort of starting the spark, yeah?
Yeah, so I mean, like working with primary school children, children in special needs schools, just making science work for them so that they can see it as a place where they might want to work, or at least where they're interested and engaged, so they can ask the right questions of politicians when they grow up.
Right then. So as we said before I rudely interrupted you, so, you know, agriculture is not only, you know, things that grow in fields, says he, obviously well up with the farming lingo, but also politics, environment, and also, I mean, it's society, because you only have to look at the recent sort of proposed or the tax situation with farmers, and the countryside explodes.
It certainly does. I mean, in the UK at the moment, we're in the same as a wider Europe, you know, we're in serious financial trouble, I think, in terms of everything that is happening. And we've paid farmers and encouraged them to do this all-out farming, you know, this kind of increased production all the time. And then climate change comes along, and we're kind of coming to terms with the fact that we're going to have to change how we do agriculture. And that's kind of what the book's about.
When we say try to change how we do agriculture, also, we're seeing the shift on how agriculture is done. Because if you're a child who was, you know, born in the 60s, grew up in the 70s, everything was supposed to be fine with pesticides and huge farms, straight to supermarkets. It was the brave new world, etc. But we've now done a 180 flip thing on that. So are large farms, you know, big farmers are saying, not big farmer PH, but big farmer as in big farms. Is that still something that is pushing the narrative? You know, where do we spend? I mean, how do we reconcile feeding a population with environmental, concerns for the future?
That is exactly the question. You've hit the nail on the head, Giles. How on earth are we meant to feed a growing population with climate change whilst trying to repair the damage that we've done to the environment through, you know, the way that we've farmed over the last 50 years? And it's going to take governments to intervene to make that happen, to help our farmers to change from what we told them they were supposed to be doing into different ways. And it's going to take time, and it's going to take us as consumers to also change some of our ways.
But isn't the, one of the problems, because I mean, I grew up, I didn't spring out and into my bear fully formed, believe it or not. But, you know, I grew up on the Staffordshire Shropshire borders farming community. OK, young farmers, point to point, all that sort of stuff. Everybody, every had a Range Rover with a tailgate, etc., you know, and all that sort of thing there. So we kind of know. You know, lots of my friends' fathers were farmers. We kind of know where the food comes from. But what we've seen is a general disconnect from the population to farming. And farming is damn hard work. I mean, to try and get people into farming, that's why it's a family business. Because if you wanted to become a farmer, I think very few people would go, oh, I can do that. It's not sort of counting sheep at 3 p.m. and then going to have a Guinness. It's up at 4 a.m. and, you know, at unquestionable hours. So has that disconnect between farming folk and real folk and people living in urban centres, does that add something to the narrative as well?
Yeah, I think it does. People are much less aware of what's happening in the fields around them and where their food comes from. They're unaware of the amount of waste there is in the system and the amount of work that goes into producing a crop. So I think, you know, people expect food to be cheap, but it's become cheap through the way that we subsidise food. I say cheap, it doesn't feel cheap, but relatively lower than the cost of production. And it, you know, the things that we're talking about having to change because of climate change means that food costs are going up. I mean, take olive oil, that's gone up like a huge amount in, say, the last, 5 years. It's kind of tripled in price. Mm. And that's, it's an almost direct result of the droughts in southern Spain over the last few years.
And so how are farmers going to react to this? Because if you're being driven by politics or politicians who've got a strategy that doesn't really listen to what they're being told by the science and environment, then they're going to have to be changing their, you know, changing their course every time a government comes in. And farming doesn't work like that. You need to be, you know, doing things 10, 15, 20 years in advance. I mean, forget the, you know, the four, those of us who remember the Jethro Tull sort of thing, not the band, but you have to have that rotation system. And you know, farmers can't just snap their fingers and suddenly become automated or put a whole new crop in or even find a workforce, for goodness sake.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with agriculture is we need long-term planning. So it needs to go beyond a single term of like Parliament within the UK so that we're looking at funding long term so that people can plan what they're going to do, what crops they're going to put in. And that's particularly important with perennial crops, things like apples and like olives that I mentioned earlier, crops that, you know, you won't see a return from them for several years after you plant them. You need to know whether it's worth actually planting that crop or not. And you've got to make a decision now, thinking about your profit in 5 years' time when there's a completely different government in, probably.
So when you come to write this book, I mean, who are you speaking to? Farmers? Are you speaking to politicians? Are you speaking to consumers? Are you speaking to the, you know, to wholesalers? I mean, how do you form a picture before you make put forth some ideas of how to get ourselves out of, you know, how to go forward?
So when I wrote this book, I had in mind myself when I was about, you know, sort of like leaving sixth form, as maybe something I might have read sort of like at the end of school before I went away to university when I was going to study, you know, botany and agriculture and things. Right. As a really good sort of, it's kind of a snapshot, including some of the past, where we've come from, and ideas for the future. And I thought if I wrote it for that kind of audience, then it would also work for like a much wider audience. I'm not requesting any specialised knowledge in order to be able to read it.
And I mean, you talk about changing the way in which we consume. Presumably small changes. I mean, meat is expensive. It should be expensive. You know, because if you want to have decent meat, it comes with a cost. And yet we're going for the fast food options. We need to change our diet to a more, I'm not saying we should all become vegetarians, but we need to look at more sustainable, and less heavy on the environment, substitutes for meat. I'm not saying that go and eat tofu, but vary your diet. So it's not meat heavy, your fish, wholesale. I'm going to sound like a complete, you know, complete wicker wearing so and so. But you see where I'm coming from here. So we need to have a change. And also the fact, the way that, you know, we order in fast food, and that produces waste as well, the way that we consume and we put away.
Yes, I mean, food waste is a major way in which we can reduce the impact of agriculture on the planet, because we waste such an enormous quantity of food, stuff that doesn't get harvested in the field because it doesn't meet the right dates for a supplier, when there's actually nothing wrong with it. Things that get damaged and lost in the food chain, waste at supermarkets, waste at restaurants, waste when it comes to our homes, because people have also become disconnected in knowing when food is safe to eat. So, like, you know, in my house, my kids are used to tasting the hummus, and if it tastes fizzy, don't eat it.
Correct.
Yeah, you know, we're not looking at the date on the lid. We need to learn how to judge when food is safe for ourselves, rather than throwing it out when it passes that date.
Presumably, you give it to your little sibling, and if they fall over, then it's not safe to eat. It's probably the litmus. but here's another thing, and this is one of my bugbears. A very good friend of mine, she runs a charity that goes around Newcastle in an old mobile library, and they sell, it's a greengrocer's, and they sell fruit, and they sell vegetables and fruits in some of the most deprived areas in Liverpool, and they teach people how to cook it, because we've lost that connection of making everything count, of leftovers, of that whole thing, which was home economics, which was how you survived on a budget. And I know I'm just going to sound like some complete fossil here, but you are nodding your head, Sarah, so at least I think I'm going down the right path.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my children go to a regular state secondary school, and they had, the ones who didn't take cookery to GCSE had only cooked about 3 or 4 dishes in their whole time, because that's the way the timetable works. They didn't learn how to cook some really basic stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just down to the way the timetable is so crammed with stuff that there's not enough time to give people the basics of how to cook for themselves from ingredients, which, although it takes more time, is, you know, it can be a lot cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are the sort of recommendations that we can, because it is a long-term situation, and we know that, you know, with today's headline saying, gosh, hotter than Morocco, but this is something we've got to A, be concerned about the environment, B, can be concerned about who's going to go out there and actually pick the damn stuff, because 5 years ago, as we call it, El Brezi happened over there, and a sustainable and sensible long-term policy. So towards farmers, I mean, what small steps can we as the general public take to sort of, apart from sending off another missive to our MP, what are the small steps that we can make and hopefully point agriculture in the right direction?
Sure. So I think, you know, we've got things that we can do at home, like reducing food waste, are really simple ones. We can reduce the amount of meat we eat. Animals will always be needed in agriculture because they produce manure, and manure is great for the soil. It helps to produce healthy plants. We need that poo. So, you know, we need animals in the rotation. So there will always be meat around, but we need to take the quantity of meat, eggs and dairy down that we eat. And we see that in sort of people who are, you know, in their 20s now, are choosing to eat less meat. They're eating less beef and less lamb and eating more chicken, which has a lower carbon, you know, a lower emissions footprint. But the treatment of chickens in factory farms doesn't matter altogether.
That was going to be my thing. Yeah, great, you're not eating so much red meat, but then you've got to make sure your chickens are, because obviously intensive chicken farming, we've seen the pictures, and that will put you, I mean, I know chickens like is the number one sort of meat source anywhere, but it is quite horrendous. So we've got to look at more sustainable and more humanitarian chicken, you know, free rangers with a happy smile on their faces sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the problem we have with, you know, any production is the difference between, you know, how much it actually costs and how much money people have in their pockets to eat. Sometimes you don't have the luxury of choosing a free-range chicken. You know, you might need to eat the cheapest chicken available to you, which will not be a nice free-range chicken that's lived in a field and had a name. You know, it's
But the marketing of fast and processed foods is as such that with the money that you could take from, and I know it's, and this is a broad brush, so shoot me down, but that, you know, because we are being pushed by Just Eat and this deep pan thing and get a free thing of chips and the whole thing, and you can drop 30 pounds on food that makes you hungry half an hour later, whereas 20 pounds can get you and if you know how to use it, can get you something that will keep you going through basically most of the week.
Yeah, I mean, this is very true. I mean, we are, it's another major aspect of agriculture, the lobbying, the advertising, the consumer pressure. You know, we're told that, you know, if you live in a wealthy country, you should have a diet rich in meat and you should be able to go to the supermarket and buy all these foods and you shouldn't have to prepare things. But, you know, and that becomes like an aspiration for people. But actually, it might not actually be the best thing for their health.
Indeed. So just some short, I mean, we mentioned a couple of them. So what, where do you, are you filled with optimism for the future of agriculture? I mean, do you think we should be making the right steps? This is a way to make the right steps?
Yeah, I mean, farmers are an intrinsically flexible people who love their land, they love their animals. What they want to do is to produce food. It's what they do. And if we want to change the way that that is done, we're going to have to financially support them to do that new kind of farming, or maybe it's harking back to an older style of farming, rather than paying them for maximum production.
The book is called The Future of Agriculture. It's by Sarah Birch, who is speaking today. Listeners, you can order it. You can go and find I like the front cover. I must admit, a very striking front cover. You go to our virtual bookstore, click on the front cover, and it'll be winging its way to you. Sarah, if people want to find you on the internet and say nice things to you, where's the best place to find you?
So I am these days on Blue Sky. That's kind of my main haunt, yeah.
Brilliant. So look for Sarah Birchall, and that's spelled BEARCHELL. The book is called The Future of Agriculture. It's by Sarah Birchall. Sarah, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Thank you for having me.